Please join me in welcoming our great guests. So, Freda, let's start with you. MPI is a very interesting institution. Can you just give us a little more explanation about what it does in terms of forwarding the careers and the films of free market filmmakers?
Right. Yeah. We started this because we kept hearing the reason there are no films that project liberty and freedom is that the right doesn't have any talent. And
that's not true.
That's not true. And one of the things MPI does is it goes out and it solicits filmmakers who are right of center in their thought and supports them, either them or their project. And the idea behind this is twofold. One, we have to find people who are really, truly talented, and they have a project that simply just needs financial support, or they themselves need financial support. And then secondly, we want to bring them into the fold so that as they're rising up, they don't get co-opted by the mindset in Hollywood, and that they have a support network to feed their thinking about developing films that have a philosophy as either a fundamental theme or just characters that believe in freedom.
And one of the interesting things that we saw in Mind Your Own Business, which we saw the little clip from it, is how, and it may seem obvious to say, but the power of the visual. And we're so used to seeing the noble environmentalist crusader, and economic growth is so often depicted as unfair and exploitative. But there, what you see in that great clip from Mind Your Own Business is that, yes, environmentalists really can be out of touch sometimes. Can you talk about that?
I can. Ann and Phelim are here. I won't take their thunder. But Mind Your Own Business did something that hadn't been done before, which is show a different side of the environmental argument. Up till now, we tried to refute what environmentalists said. And basically, what Ann and Phelim did with that film was they said, look, let us show you all the great things about development and why development is so needed. And one of the interesting things I found about Mind Your Own Business is even people who knew the arguments, like for everyone who knows Don Boudreau, we knew how important development was, yet seeing the pictures of people in poverty saying, you know, I really could have used that job, or what difference it would have made to me if that mine was here. That just made the whole argument, made it so much more powerful. And I know everyone who saw it, they remembered it more, and they could retell it much better than if they had just read about it in a paper.
Jim, Michael, I wonder if you have any thoughts just about that. I'm thinking specifically of Mad Men. There's a scene where the blatant male chauvinism is what's remarked about the show a lot. But what you also see is sort of the self-correcting nature of the market at work. And so there's this character of Peggy, who's the victim of a lot of sexual harassment, and she's talked down to by all the male executives. And then one day, in a sort of serendipitous way, one of the biggest pigs of them all actually recognizes, sees a spark of talent in Peggy. And so that's, it would be very hard, I think, to convey that to people and to say, oh, you know, the market will figure it out. That's such a platitude for most people. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, Mad Men's an interesting show. How many people have seen Mad Men? My father was an advertising executive on Madison Avenue in the early 1960s, and I sent him a copy of a bunch of the shows, a couple of DVDs before the show came out, and I said, what do you think, Dad? He said, we drank a lot more. So I will say it is interesting because what's frustrating is wherever you go, wherever you speak, is everybody sort of getting buttonholed on one side or the other. I mean, if you think about Madison Avenue, you talk about, you know, I mean, I'll give you a campaign that my dad sort of shakes his head because my mom died of lung cancer. My father had a campaign that he ran for cigarettes that, I swear to you, this is true, the tagline was, 4 out of 5 doctors recommend. My mother's friends told her when she was pregnant that if she wanted to have a smaller baby and, you know, an easier labor, to smoke. So it's a but
and it
but
works. It
I,
works.
And evidently, I was still 8 pounds. But the but I'll tell you, I think the I was sort of interested in what you were talking about a little bit about around the globe. There's another company I'm involved with. I think Dick Troop's done a little work with us as well. Navica. We have these. I'm actually the chairman of this company. We have offices in third world countries, and we have basically we're cutting out all the middlemen. So that you have an artist in Peru and he makes tapestries or he makes blankets and he'll go on his journey across the mountains, come up into our Lima, Peru office. We'll take pictures of the merchandise and we'll take everything on consignment. My partners are National Geographic and the World Bank. And so basically he takes a third, shipping takes a third, and Navica takes a third. And so we've recently had in some of these countries. I want to be reasonably politically correct here, if that's possible, even though Mad Men's not, is that all of a sudden we're having some of these countries, that as the artisans are doing better and better, there's all of a sudden this thing came up, which is taxes. And you should see the reaction on some of these people's faces when they when you bring that up. But I think that the, again, I was going to, as I'm watching all those bios and I'm thinking about everybody getting buttonholed in one area or the other, and it's sort of fascinating to hear. We take both views. We don't believe in censorship. We also released Fahrenheit 9/11, I'm not sure that Michael Moore, who's a difficult guy, the nicest thing I can say about him, he would. I'm not sure that he was right. I mean, he was what more. I think he actually was more right than more wrong in many ways. But that's like a long driveway to a small house. I'm not sure I answered your question.
Well, I think it was in there somewhere. Jim, you've got this interesting Jamero Center at Penn State, and in sort of what we've been discussing here, it is related to that. We've been singling out some of the non-statist, non-liberal examples out there. Seems to me that the other side is far more prevalent. But I guess the big question for the Jamero Center is, to what extent does this matter in the big picture? To what extent does the entertainment industry affect public opinion?
Yeah, well, that's my passion and interest. You know, and the Jamero Center that I established at Penn State, it's the Jamero Center for the Study of Media Influence, is kind of a subset of my broader interest in media influence. And if we have time, we can talk a little bit more about media's role in this last election, which is absolutely fascinating. And I think, incidentally, there's a lot of disinformation about the role of media in this last election, especially with respect to blogs. But the Jamero Center attempts to do something that has actually never been done before, and the reason it's never been done before is extremely hard to do. It's very easy to figure out what people think. Public opinion polls are the easiest thing in the world. The scientific method works most of the time. If you take a look at this last election, most people were right on about how it was going to turn out. Go to 500 people, get a systematic random sample. You can do this. The problem is, figuring out what people think is really simple. The hard part is, why do they think it? Why do people think what they think? And so what we're trying to do at the Jamero Center, which is extremely difficult and daunting, is follow the public opinion polls so that if ABC or CNN says, this is a public opinion poll that we've taken that says 42% of the people in America think this, we purport to follow that up the next day or within 3 days at the latest and try to determine why they think it and to what extent did what they read in the media or hear in the media or see in the media influence that opinion. And that's extremely difficult because even though media is an overwhelming force in what people think, it's not the only force. So you don't have like a laboratory here where you can set that aside. You have peer influences, you have psychological predispositions. Obviously, there are a lot of ways people come to these, so to isolate the role of the media is extremely difficult. But a perfect example just happened in the last 2 or 3 days. I mean, CNN, without irony, announced that they did a poll and that they announced that Barack Obama has a 75% approval rating. And this is 3 days after the election, and they didn't it never occurred to them to understand that the reason he has a 7,500% approval is because how he was treated in the media. People didn't have any independent. He was hidden for 3 days. There wasn't anything going on, but the media gave him deification, whatever it was, and that influenced public opinion. So CNN created this subset of public opinion, then went out and surveyed it and said, "This is what people think." So we're attacking this, and you know, and at the risk of repeating, it's really daunting. I mean, we are trying to. It's never been done. I mean, you can't find one study that tries to establish why people come to the conclusions they think. But we're hard at it. We have wonderful people at Penn State, and we're really going to try to break through on the second part of what people think, why they think it.
How do you get that reported? Because certainly the media doesn't want to put it out there. So how do you get that out there?
Well, basically, you know, on the website, because it's an academic institution, there's a lot of abstracts that are being done. Ann Major, who runs the center, is appearing at academic conferences all the time. The one thing that we haven't tried to do yet is get into the broader press. And the reason for that is we're not quite ready for that yet. I mean, we're in the process of building this thing. I keep repeating that this is hard work. It's a difficult task. So we don't want to get out there before we think we're really ready for it. So most of our publicity is within the academic community. But we're making some interesting breakthroughs, and I think within a couple of years, we're going to be able to go out broadly on this and expose some of these realities.
And you mentioned blogs. I know you have an interesting and contrarian take on all that. You know, we're all so enamored of blogs and new media and see television largely as a slowly sinking ship. You say, no way. Explain.
Well, it isn't a contrarian view. I mean, I'm obsessed with the power of television. I mean, television, it seems like exposition of the obvious, but people don't really stop to think about it. You know, television is incredibly the most powerful medium of influence that has ever been devised by man, because it's got sight and sound and motion and emotion. You can get emotion in television advertising, and it reaches tens and tens and tens of millions of people in numbers far in excess of any other medium. So as a consequence, people around the Western industrialized world essentially do what television tells them to do. Now, on an anecdotal basis, people don't agree with that. You know, I don't listen to television advertising. It doesn't affect me. But on a macro basis, it absolutely affects us. There is an absolute causal relationship between what people say on television and how people behave, which is why soap people, when they have access to magazines and billboards and newspapers and radio, they spend 89 cents out of every dollar on television, because television works. And the big thing about television, which is different than other media, is it can intrude. You can be sit there watching, you know, a show, not thinking about, you know, what you're going to buy for your next car, and television will intrude on you and get you to do things that you wouldn't otherwise do. The blogs are not important in influence yet, in my view, because they are preaching to the choir. You go onto a blog because you want your ideas reinforced. And so the great center of the world, the undecideds, is what people try to get, you know, in any election or any advertising medium. They you're not really getting those on the blog. Blogs are great for raising money, because you get to your ardent supporters. They love you already. They go to you because they want to have their ideas reinforced, and then you can raise money. But because blogs are not attracting contrarian people, they're not influencing people in other ways. But television, as I said on a cruise ship lecturing about this just 2 weeks ago, right before the election, you know, you got 11% undecided. And what's going to really happen is over the next remaining week or whatever it was, people will be sitting there watching a television show, not having figured out what they're going to do, and all of a sudden they will be intruded on by a commercial that they weren't looking at or thinking about, and that probably one by one is how they came to decide who they finally were going to vote for. Blogs could change over the future, but now television is, and again, you look at the campaigns. I mean, the overwhelming majority of the money, $1 billion spent on this presidential election, the overwhelming majority of that money was spent on television, because these people know that that's what works, and that's what can intrude on that great undecided center.
And your point about preaching to the choir reminds me of a point that Freda made about when we were speaking earlier about documentaries. You think it's blogs, you see some overlap with blogs and documentaries, right?
Right, but I want to just sort of echo a point you made. One of the things, another medium we find is effective, and this is in another hat we have, which is Americans for Prosperity, and that's radio. We do a thing in New Jersey called the Taxpayer Minute. And for a lot less money than going on TV, we're able to reach a fairly broad audience. And it's a really neat little mechanism to, in 1 minute, get out a message about freedom. So if you can't afford media, because I agree with you, the difference between radio and TV is you're seeking out people, whereas the internet seeks people out. But the point I was making earlier to Ted about documentaries, one of the things I've observed is you basically, the documentaries are made for the choir. Because if you think about who goes to see a documentary, it's someone who already believes in the cause. Most people are not going to go out and see. First of all, it's very hard to get anyone to go see a documentary. I think very few make any money, and it's very difficult to get anyone to see them. But if you're going to get anyone at all, it's going to be someone who already believes the message. So documentaries are not at all a way, in my opinion, to convert anyone to your message.
But there is still value in preaching to the converted, right?
Oh, yes. The point I made earlier, you are able to both energize and inform your base in a way that you couldn't otherwise do it with a documentary.
The only thing I disagree with you a little bit about is that if you take a, I think that's probably true for the opening weekend or for the first 1 or 2 weeks, you take a movie like Fahrenheit 9/11, and the opening weekend or the opening week, the people that went there were the people that already were very anti the Iraqi war. But as that sort of, the people went and started talking about it, and, you know, we're all friends with people on both sides of the aisle, and you started saying, you know, you should really see this, you should see the points that are made. I think in weeks 2 and week 3 and weeks 4, I think it was a much more balanced audience. Now, if the movie's not any good or the doc isn't any good, you're sort of dead on arrival, you'd never get to that second or third week. But that movie or that documentary went on to do $120 million of box office. I mean, it was a monster. The reason we had W that just came out, and I'm a Republican, but I'll tell you, I think that the reason that they do a thing called cinema scores at the end of a movie, then they interview people coming out, and the movie got terrible cinema scores the first weekend, and then it went on to do okay. And the reason it got terrible scores, to your point, was the people that showed up were the absolute Bush haters the opening weekend, and they found the movie to not bash him nearly as much as they had hoped for. Mm-hmm. So it's an interesting balancing act. And we have another movie, by the way, that maybe doesn't necessarily take a point of view, or you don't know what it is. We had Bill Maher's Religious. I don't know if anybody... Did anybody see Religious? It's pretty well done, I think. It's got an interesting point of view, and it pokes fun at just about every religion. So docs are tricky.
Where do you see that they... Where's the best place for docs, generally? Is it on TV, perhaps?
Well, look, I agree with the point wholeheartedly about television. In that it's still a very effective way to advertise. I mean, what's happening, though, is that it used to be the scatter market for advertising was very expensive, the local market, but when you're talking, I saw a statistic the other day that they're expecting 3 in 10 local car dealerships to go out of business in the next 12 months, which is going to create enormous inventory and drive down the prices in the local market tremendously. But I do think that, it is far and away the best way to reach a gigantic audience of eyeballs, and as you talked about, sort of, you know, jamming their way into the psyche of the person that's watching. I agree with that. I think that there are some films and television shows that you can very specifically target an audience, and there's some great places to do that on the web as well. It used to be that, you know, less than 1% of our advertising dollars, and this year it's going to be close to $400 million. It used to be that less than 1% of our advertising dollars would go to the internet. I think on some movies where we're trying to target specific segments, we can approach 12-15%.
Yeah. Jim, did you want to react to that?
Well, I just want to react to one other thing about this blogs and talk radio preaching to the converted and how that doesn't influence other people. I mean, we know that's true at the point, but we also don't know the extent to which it's not true. What I mean by that is, again, I'm very big on research, and I know that most people go to blogs, most people go to Rush Limbaugh are already predisposed toward that, documentaries, as you say. But it's also interesting to find out, nobody's doing this, and I think we'll expand at the Jamero Center to try to do this kind of thing, is to determine who else is listening to these shows. That interests me, too. For example, Michael Medved is always seeking people who disagree with him. And this is anecdotal because we don't know what those numbers are, but he gets a lot of them. So it would be interesting for someone, and again, nobody seems to be answering these questions, to go to talk radio, to go to these blogs, even though my premise is they're mainly preaching to the converted already, but to find out exactly that, you know, 5% of the people who listen to Rush Limbaugh disagree with him, and they do it for other, like as you say, and that's something I think, again, we need to research and try to find out.
Interest in that.
Yeah, and especially because it's a moving target, as you were suggesting about the internet, the dramatic increase you're going to have. I mean, we, you know, no matter what we say here, it's the dynamics of what's going on in this marketplace are just fantastic. It's so exciting right now because it's a moving target, because it's transgressing, transposing all the time, and that's what makes it so much fun.
I want to talk about, we're talking all about changing mindset, but I think also many of us want to go beyond just changing what people think and have them take action. You know, contact mm-hmm. their legislators or get involved with local politics. And that's really the hard step, the next hard step. And if, I'm talking more almost as a donor. And as a donor, I would not invest in a documentary film unless it had what I called a back end associated to it. Whereas, you know, once you created all this energy, you got people involved in the issue, they need to know what to do and how to do it. And you have to be associated with an organization that can take the energy and channel it.
And you see a good example of that in An Inconvenient Truth.
Right. Well, Participant Productions they've done it to the ultimate. Every film on Participant Productions, this is Jeffrey Scholes from eBay. He created this organization, Participant Productions. He's the one who funded it in Convenient Truth, Syriana, North Country. He's done some films, those of us who are libertarians would like, The Visitor, trying to, you know, promote immigration. But every film associated with it you have three choices. Find out more information, spread information, share information about this issue, and three, get involved. And when you drill down on each of them, they'll take you to organizations that can enable you to carry out those actions.
Michael, let's talk about the Ayn Rand Atlas Shrugged project. I'm sure a lot of people in this audience's hearts skipped a beat when they saw that. It really is a passion project for you, isn't it? And can you give us an update on the status?
I will. The funny thing about that movie is I actually made that deal. I was raised and still a Catholic, and I was in church. And I actually saw the guys that I knew had the rights to Atlas Shrugged. And at the end of Mass, I walked over and I said to them, I'm interested in Atlas Shrugged. Maybe we can make some, which is sort of ironic because Ayn Rand, as you know, is an atheist. But we've been putting together, I think we have finally, I mean, look, movie business is an art and a science. And again, sort of breaking it down to simplistic form, at least from my perspective, and I'm an old Wall Streeter, is if you have a great piece of material, a script, or source material like that book that turns into a great script, you'll attract a terrific filmmaker who will get the actors that you want. So, obviously, we started out with a gigantic book, a fantastic story and philosophy. We tried to approach several different white writers. The best draft that we got out, and I think we're pretty close to where we want to be, was Randall Wallace. Randall wrote Braveheart, for those of you that might have seen that movie. And we are, and at the same time, Angelina Jolie has always been interested in playing Dagny Taggart. And we're hopeful she is attached to the project, and if she ever decides to stop increasing the size of her family, that may actually happen. We are out to filmmakers right now. It is interesting because it is certainly not the favored philosophy at this moment in time, and so you'll see that I think that much of Hollywood is left of center, and so you've got some reactions about how can this be about the individual? Look what's happening in the country, and we're going the opposite way. And as a contrarian, that's the good news, because by the time this movie is shot and on the screen, the world could again take a different turn.
Mm-hmm. And do you think, with all the talk about redistribution, do you think the message might be even more important in these times when some of the men of the mind are thinking, well, maybe we will shrug?
Well, I love that old expression, which is the sight of the gallows tends to focus the mind. And I think there's a lot of truth in that. And I think that it is interesting to see about, look, government is probably the least efficient organization that I know of. I'm just hoping that some aspect of the U.S. government mirrors the efficiency of the Santa Monica parking department, because, I mean, seriously, I mean, it's incredible. I mean, you are, you know, you're 1 minute over on your meter, and you have, why is that so efficient and nothing else is? There must be some secret plan where they're incentivized somehow to get paid. But I do think that it is going to be, it is a little ticklish now, but I actually think it's going to work in our favor as people look at increased taxes and increased capital gain. And they talk about, you know, that redistribution of wealth. I mean, you know, who is the government to dictate that? And so, again, it's funny when you talk about all these first dollar players in Hollywood where they're very focused on, I mean, I don't know if you know this, Steven Spielberg, you know, in his original Jaws deal, in order to keep him at Universal, he gets a percentage, tiny percentage of every dollar spent at Universal theme parks. Okay, now this is a guy that, by the way, now, is he the capitalist or is it his lawyer? But the idea that these guys are always talking about the fact that common cause, we're going to give away money and, you know, we're going to share the wealth and redistribute that. And don't get me wrong, a lot of these guys are very charitable, but they're also, they can afford to be.
And we were talking about preaching to the choir. It seems like Atlas Shrugged is enough of a cultural phenomenon. You'll get a lot of people who aren't members of the choir. What are you hoping that the average person who hasn't been steeped in Ayn Rand will take away from the movie?
I think that Ayn Rand was about, I think she was generally optimistic about the individual. I mean, nothing great in the history of the world has ever come out of pessimism. I mean, if you haven't got some crazy person that's optimistic about something, nothing ever happens. And I mean crazy in a good way. So I'm hopeful that if we make the right movie and the story is told correctly, that people will say, you know, not only can I benefit myself, I can take society to a whole new level as well by creating something that starts by benefiting me and maybe my family, but from there can benefit, you know, many, many people.
We talked a little bit about how, shocker, Hollywood is liberal. What I want to get into a little bit now is, why is Hollywood liberal, and more importantly, does it matter, and how does it matter if it does? Jim, do you have any thoughts?
Well, if I can broaden that to media and Hollywood sure. And media, because they're really two sides of the same coin. You know, I don't want this to come out wrong, because it's, you said slightly to the left. I know you were being diplomatic. I mean, it's way to the left. And what's interesting when you work in Hollywood, by the way, as I do, is the assumption that everybody's liberal. I mean, there's this assumption. I mean, you just don't even consider the possibility, if you walk into a meeting with a bunch of agents or entertainment attorneys or whatever, people start talking about George Bush, or they start talking about, you know, politics in a way that comes from this axiomatic belief that everybody in that room is a liberal. It's just fantastic. It's just like this, and the same thing is true with the arts, because I think you have to fold them all together. The arts, this musical theater fellow up in Northern California somewhere gave money to in favor of Proposition 8, and now he's been ostracized and essentially is left to fire. Now, what's interesting about that is this assumption that everybody in that theater was liberal. It wasn't even accepted that there could be another point of view. What's interesting to me is when you really talk to the people and understand what they think and what they believe, it's amazing it's not more liberal, especially the press. In other words, you can, as left-wing, for instance, as the New York Times is, and I know it is because I read it every day, If you knew how those people really felt about things, you have to admire their restraint to a certain extent. You know,
it's talk about optimism. Right?
Yeah, you know,
wow,
the glass half full. You know,
that's some mental acrobatics.
Because they hate George Bush, and in a way they do rein that in to a certain extent. But it does matter because the influence is palpable. I mean, you know, one of the things that intrigues me. I mean, I was talking last night about the fairness doctrine. The fairness doctrine scares me to death. And the congressman who's going to be addressing Us Tomorrow thinks that it doesn't have a chance of passing. Apparently Obama's against it. That makes me very happy. But it still scares me to death. Because what's interesting, and they say Obama thinks that because of talk radio and blogs and things like that, there's been kind of diversity in the media.
Just briefly describe, the Fairness Doctrine would essentially require that, for instance, a right-wing program would have to have the same amount of left-wing programming, and a lot of people think it would just kill talk radio.
Yeah, exactly. So that, and that would be true with only with broadcast media. So that Rush Limbaugh, if he said something bad about Barack Obama, he would then have to say something bad about, you know, Sarah Palin or whatever. You have to kind of, every government person like ticking this off like you get the bridge card,
but,
you know.
But the libertarian point of view is always left out.
It's like amazing.
We want equal time.
Yeah,
it's if they do that, they should hire the Santa Monica parking meter.
Yeah, same people that take it off. So. But it does matter. Oh, because what I was going to say is, apropos of your question, does it matter, that despite the fact there's been a lot more diversity in media than there was, I mean, that we understand that there is talk radio, there is blogs or other things, but still the overwhelming preponderance of influence in this country remains, as of today, with the mainstream media. There's absolutely no question about that. And the subliminal influence that you do get from Hollywood. I mean, if you go to 25 movies and business people are always the villains, and other people are always noble, you can't help but, you know, form your opinions based on that, the subliminal realities. So it does matter. It forms opinion. And one of the things that it's hard to understand sometimes, because people like us, we live, to be honest with you, in kind of a rarefied atmosphere socioeconomically. But if you start to understand some of the people who maybe are less educated, maybe not as involved, you have to understand the extent to which they are more susceptible to this kind of influence than someone in this room might be, for example.
Freda, what advice would you give to, we probably have some out there right now, free market filmmakers or wannabe free market filmmakers?
I would say start small. Start with a little 2-minute short, make it prep, and hook up with some very high interest issue and an organization that will propel it around the web so that you can get so you can get noticed. That would be my.
Michael, Jim.
Go ahead, Mike. I'd say, you know, here's what I would say. Don't let a philosophy get in the way of a good story. And what I mean by that is, don't hit people over the head with it. So you can make your point. I'm not saying to make it subtly, but I am saying that focus on a good story. Focus on something that has a beginning, a middle, and an end. I know Jeff pretty well, and you know he's done a great job. He wants his people to start thinking again, and he wants to raise social consciousness, and it's he's been given the means, 6 billion of them. To do that, and so, but I would say that there's a, and don't be afraid to show both sides of it. I saw this press. I was thinking about what you were saying before about these statistics. You know, that there was a, I don't know if you guys saw this, where they were talking about late night comedians, and they were talking about the ratio of McCain bashing versus Obama, and I think it was 7 or 8 to 1. Which they would just, and it becomes almost this sort of subliminal thing where you just get pounded and pounded. I mean, I even saw that, I don't know, right down the final stretches that I looked at the New York Times, which I think is, it's a great newspaper, but I'm a little gleeful just watching the problems they're going to run into as print sort of evaporates.
Yeah.
But you look at the pictures, and whether you like McCain or liked Obama, and you can sort of pick, I'm sure, good things and bad things about both, but you look at the pictures they put, the juxtaposition of any picture they put of McCain. I mean, he literally looked like he was drooling, and where Obama looked like he was lit for a movie. I mean, it was really something. So
the Onion had a piece, the video version of the Onion, on Obama practicing his staring off into the future pose. Like, there's that.
I will say this is that, and I liked John McCain, but. You know, when high definition was not his friend.
Right, right, here. Well, let's go with the big one then. Why aren't there more free market films? Is it a supply problem, a demand problem?
You know, free market, I mean, that's so hard to say.
Or loosely defined, you know.
Free market film. So look, free market film. Did anybody ever see The Castle?
I saw it. I mean, Robert Redford?
No, not that one. Oh, the Australian film. It was an Australian film. Did you see
The Last Castle?
Very much a free market film in many ways. Look, we were talking about a bunch of different subject matters, and they said, tell me about sort of free market. You know, what are your favorite free market films? And I said, I guess I could say Butch Cassidy and Sundance Kid, but they were outlaws. so there aren't a lot of them out there. I'm not sure I have a good answer on why that is. I think that it's a... It's difficult to sort of put them in a in a weird way. Fahrenheit 9/11 was a very free market film. I mean, you like it or you don't like it, and it really was. Religious is a free market film. I think there's what's happened is that the you look at the demand for people's time, and you look at whether it's video games or DVDs or video on demand or doing some sport or 12 different, things, activities that they have going on, that it becomes, you've got that target is moving and so small. And and I think also what happens is that you got to, for something like that you're talking about, the free market type feel to it, boy, you better hit it dead on, because the average motion picture today costs $35 million to market. That's just to market it. So it's a difficult thing. So everybody takes the safe bet, which are, the giant popcorn, movies, the James Bond and the Angelina Jolie playing an assassin, or some giant animated movie. It's a different mentality right now, and we've become a little bit of the victim of the expense.
Jim Freda, do you have thoughts on that?
Yeah, I have one thought. I keep coming up with these imponderables because I'm very interested in research to try to find answers to some of these questions. And there aren't more free market films because you have a left-wing media who have a different worldview. But what's more interesting to me about that is why. See, the people who have that worldview, who make the kinds of movies that typify Hollywood in terms of worldview, are very smart people.
And I mean, if they had a great script that was free market, that would make them money, wouldn't they jump on it?
Well, yeah, but even then they could put nuances mm-hmm. in the film. I mean, and most of them, can influence that in certain ways. I mean, on a specific film that may be true, but again, if it's like advertising, you look at the big picture about the totality of movies done by the totality of people in this community, where do they drift? But as I say, I'm the more I get into this, the more fascinated I become with trying to figure out why. Because I emphasize they're smart people, they're well-read people. I mean, it's amazing. Because I always think, boy, I'm going to go into these bunch of left-wing people. They're all going to be stupid. I'm going to be bored. Well, they're not. They're funny, and they're stimulating, and they're exciting, and they're dynamic. And then yet they have this worldview. And I would like to, figure out why. It's interesting to me. Why is that? The arts, the media, all of it.
But I was going to say, as I'm listening to you, there's probably more free market, again, that's a big bucket. There's probably more free market content on television. And I think in many cases the writing is better because all of a sudden it's not as expensive to distribute that product. There are many more channels. And, again, Mad Men, it could be many different shows, but Mad Men that's a real free market show. I mean, there's everybody sleeping with everybody. There's absolutely no political correctness to it. I mean, okay. Sexual harassment is rampant on both sides. It's insane and by the way, in that show, that would not have worked as a movie, and it looks like it's working as a television show. Mm-hmm. Same thing with The Sopranos. We have a show, the pitch was a very short pitch. Somebody came in and they said, all right, here's the pitch. Suburban housewife, she's got a couple kids, husband drops dead of a massive heart attack, leaves her penniless, she becomes the local pot dealer, and you see the underbelly of society. That turned into a hit for us. That's Weeds. Mm-hmm. And that's that's much more of a free market type thing. So I think maybe the migration, as I think about it here, is there's more of that happening in television.
That's interesting. Do you have any thoughts for that?
Yeah, well, I think it, as Jim was saying, it very much reflects who's there. Because one of the things I think is very interesting is, you'll talk to them about a concept, and they'll go, well, I want to do something really edgy, something really different, like how gays are discriminated against. You're like, I think it's been done. Whereas, but you know, where if we come to them with a concept that we consider really interesting and edgy and has a free market approach, if they're not inclined to that point of view, they'll go, oh, that's very cliche. I mean, the opposite turn. So it really is about trying to find those, well, this is the MPI, me speaking, but promoting those who believe in liberty and helping them get into the industry, because they'll just look at films with a whole different perspective.